This is Jim Highsmith, and you're now listening to the Idol of Ride AC podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising Podcast. I'm your host, James Gifford, coming to you from the Agile 2018 conference in sweaty San Diego. It's a little unseasonably humid this year, but hey, we're still having a great time. We're at the Tequila Bar at the Marriott Hotel, and tonight our guest is Jürgen Appello. It's been really about a year since we've had him on, around the time that we started doing, he was working on the crowdfunding to really get Agility Scales going. So we wanted to take this opportunity to catch up with Jürgen and see what's going on in his world, and just give our listeners some insights about the work he's doing, and you know, help promoting some great product, and just an overall great set of thought leadership and materials that the Agile community is just, you know, adopted and are really thriving on.
So thanks, James. That's a nice introduction. And it's not as warm here as it is in the Netherlands. So actually, I am cooling off at this point, because Europe is quite hot at this time of the year.
So we'll have to get you a sweatshirt. Yeah. So you know, it's been a year since we've had you on the show, and I know you've been busy, because I've been kind of monitoring what's going on the Agility Scales Slack channel and all that. So can you kind of talk about maybe your transition from the crowdfunding and kind of the path forward give us some insights into what's going on with Agility Scales?
Yeah, definitely. So a year ago, when we were in the in our crowdfunding round, we basically had a platform. It's called Mindsettlers, that we're still working on and growing. And at that time, we had content of methods and frameworks and their practices and how to do them with guides, etc. That is all still there, but we evolved. We have a great new feature that we call tracks, so you can create tracks for your team members as a coach or consultant, where you say, if you do these practices a number of times, like for example, moving motivators twice and a celebration grid once, and a couple of times a kudo box, then you are the Manager Theater basic practitioner, and something like that. And even better, you can mix and match frameworks and methods and toolboxes. So you could borrow from game storming and core protocols and liberating structures and whatever. Make your own track across the Agile world. We call them Agile journeys for that reason, Agile adventures. And it's all about getting people to do something, to experiment. There are plenty of learning platforms out there. We don't want to compete with all the workshops that are happening in the Agile communities, but we want to give people a tool to start adventuring, to start exploring and playing with the practices, and basically giving challenges for each other, and say, well, if you complete this challenge, you get a badge from me. And it's all peer-to-peer, because I want to turn everyone into a thought leader, basically. If you have a good idea of what would be a good track for someone in a certain situation, like I want you to be a great retrospective facilitator, these are the 10 best retro techniques that I know from 5 different toolboxes, then you make it, and you invite people to follow that track. And that is new in our platform, and people really seem to like that.
And that's a fantastic feature, because a lot of times what we end up doing, you know, in our with the Agile Uprising, we're a tight-knit group of people, and we really do share those ideas, but a lot of our stuff isn't really curated, and it's us just, I'm now trying to page through 18 pages of Slack to find that tip that somebody kind of put out there that could solve some of the problems I had. So the fact that you've kind of turned it into a game, you've added gamification to it, is a powerful tool.
Yeah, we want to put significant effort into the gamification. Basically, we just started with the gamification aspect of it, and we're already feeling it. Like I noticed with one track, for example, that I'm the number 2 on the list. Basically, I was at 87%, but somebody else was at 93%. And I thought, if I do a little bit of my best, I might be the first one to finish this track, and I would be the pioneer. Forever, I will be known as the first person to finish this track. That will be immortal. silly thing, of course. But these things, they have an effect, and it, in a fun way, we can with these features, we can nudge people towards more exploration and experimentation. So that's what we definitely wanted in the platform. And the next thing that we're looking at is the suggestions, the recommendations. That naturally, logically comes at the end, because you need the data first of what are people doing. So they mark their progress along that track to say, I did this today, I did that today, it was fun or not, it was valuable for me, it was valuable for others. We have that data, we, people tag their experiences. And then based on that, we should be able to offer suggestions in the future. Like if you use the retrospective tag 5 times, we know that you're interested in that, and then could offer you the latest retro game that emerged just last week from someone, and say, isn't that a nice idea for you, for example. That's what I look forward to.
So you're almost creating some machine learning for agile practices.
Definitely. And part of it will be the tacit knowledge of coaches and consultants that should be reported to the system. Like when this happens, when there's this context for a player, then I would suggest as a coach or consultant that then look into this particular practice. But on the other hand, yes, an AI could be added to the system in the future once there's enough data. Right now there isn't. But you have to start somewhere. So in the future, I foresee that we could have an AI matching everything together with the tacit knowledge that is codified from the coach or consultant, and then just connecting the dots. Say, hey, this is what this agile coach said that you could be doing in your situation. I very much look forward to that.
So how are you kind of finding the coaches and consultants to kind of contribute to this body of knowledge?
Well, we have the same chicken and egg problem as any other social network and platform has. It is a multi-sided platform, not different from Medium or YouTube or Spotify or Netflix. There are different types of content that those platforms have. But we're not the first ones to try and solve this problem. You have different stakeholders with different needs. Their coaches, consultants on one hand, their team members on the other hand, and there are content providers such as yours truly who have ideas, often packaged as frameworks and methods and toolboxes, and they all want something from each other. It's a virtuous circle that you have to increase step by step. So you cannot just have a platform that is just valuable for coaches and consultants without anyone else on the platform. We also cannot have just team members without anyone else on the platform. We have to have them all. That's the chicken and egg problem that all the platforms face when they are multi-sided, as they call it. But I'm sure we will be able to fix that problem because we're not the first ones, as they say. So we just have to steal what others do.
So for a while there, I was working with Mike McCallough on Lean Agile Intelligence, which is it's an agile assessment product that you're able to dynamically build agile team assessments from. And it took us a long time to actually go through the actual written literature from the Scrum Guide, all of David Anderson's work, it's SAFe, and actually curate what a CMMI model would look, essentially a CMMI model would look like for teams kind of learning and progressing through practices. So I definitely can feel your pain of like trying to aggregate that and entice people. We run into that with our discourse board for the Agile Uprising. Getting people to actually contribute content to keep a lively community together is difficult. So, is there a way that our community could kind of help you along with that? If people are hearing this podcast, is there a way to submit information to you guys?
Sure, yes. So at this time, we have a back office system called Paula and Jada. They are our team members who do everything for our participants. Because we are in the MVP phase. We have a high definition minimum viable product basically now. So we have front end, but the back end, it is all fake. We have to do that manually. And that's exactly what it should be when you start at most. So the content that is on there is done by our team on behalf of the participants, the coaches, consultants, the methods and frameworks that we are already working with. They just hand us the materials, the logo and whatever, and we do it for them. Of course, in the future, when we have evidence that things are working, when there's product market fit, as they call it in the startup scene, then we're going to start building a back office and people will be able to do that themselves. It's no different from other platforms like Medium in the beginning also faked everything and they wrote, they wrote their own articles or they posted them on behalf of others who were too lazy to start with a platform that didn't have any traction at that time. You just have to start somewhere. So in the beginning we do that on behalf of other people and they can reach out to us. They can download the app for themselves from the Play Store, Google Play Store, because it's Android only at this point. And then our team will take over and put the content content on there. And anyone can join as long as there's something agile or lean about it.
That's awesome, and that's definitely a great opportunity for, you know, to get some community engagement and get them bringing some content to you. And you know, your toolbox is pretty full with a lot of the leadership techniques and things that you've brought to the market with Management 3.0. What kind of other content is kind of in there already that they could expect to find?
We have core protocols, Agile 42, Scrum guides, Judy Reese's stuff on listening. So there's, I believe we have about 40 different camps, as we call them. We have an adventurous theme, so we call people adventurers and camps, so that they where they convene and tracks and journeys that they complete, because that adds to the gamification feeling of the platform. And of course, Management 3.0 is on there, and we're working with onboarding others. I just talked today with the usual suspects, such as Scrum.org and IC Agile, and you name it. Everyone is interested. Doesn't mean that they will actually be on the platform very soon, because everyone has other priorities as well. But there's definitely the ears and eyes are open, and we're making good progress on the onboarding effort, making it interesting to start exploring. That's for sure.
Awesome. So you know, you kind of mentioned the product market fit. What are your challenges right now with kind of finding that? Like, because I've seen some of the core features, and it's like, I want to get involved with this, and I want to use it, and it's like, what would you think your kind of your biggest challenge right now for
biggest challenge is let me give an example. Everyone knows that they should exercise, that this is important to exercise, and very few people do it. And that is where the gamification, the intrinsic motivation comes in. So people tell us all the time, yeah, this is important, that I should experiment and explore agile practices, etc. So they see the importance of a platform such as the one that we're creating. It's just that I don't have time. I have other things, other priorities. But they could make time, because other people can make time to exercise and to go running. I had a run yesterday morning here in San Diego along the waterfront. It was enjoyable, but I had to make time for that. You need to evolve discipline. But I make time because I gamified it for myself. I have these targets for running, and then I give myself a pat on the back because I deserve a chocolate on the day when I did a run. Those are the intrinsic motivational techniques that you apply also on platforms, and there's plenty of fitness platforms nowadays that help people to do their exercises with gamification. And we just started on the gamification aspect with our platform, like literally just maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, because all the other stuff had to be in place first, because otherwise there's nothing to gamify in the so I look forward to using all the great techniques that there are books written full of gamification techniques out there, and just seeing what applies to us, what could we use that would nudge people to actually do that experimentation, because they want to, but they keep the subscription, because people pay for a subscription fee for the app, so they admit that, yeah, this is important. It's just that they're not coming back yet often enough to the app, so we have to keep them interested. And that's our greatest challenge, to find that intrinsic motivation.
Now, do you find that like different markets are more difficult? Like, because like right now, like the, you know, I feel like when we try to bring up, you know, when I was being a consultant or even a full-time coach, bringing up gamification in the American market, there's a lot of stuffy corporate kind of politics. Like, how do you kind of see you know, us as practitioners helping you break through, or what kind of coaching advice could you give people to be able to kind of get past some of that stuffy shirt, kind of red tapey American culture, that to help bring gamification into to company life so that we could see the benefits of agility skills?
Gamification is nothing more than a fancy term for finding the intrinsic motivation of people to get them to do something. There are wonderful books about it. The most fascinating one I found is written by Yukai Chu, a Korean guy, about his octalysis model, which is fascinating. And he lists dozens of techniques that are applied across tools and games all over the world. And once you start reading that kind of stuff, you realize this is so applicable to everything that we do in our daily lives. No matter how boring or mundane or uninteresting a task is, once we start gamifying it, once we start attaching some intrinsic motivational trigger to it, it can become fun. And gamification can be from singing while you're doing the dishes to adding an adventurous theme to your product releases to make it fun, to anything. Many people make the mistake of thinking that gamification is about points and leaderboards. That is one part of gamification, an important one, that is definitely successful for the competitive types among us. But not everyone is competitive. Some people just like a good story around what they're doing. So make up a ridiculous story about why you do what you're doing. That is gamification as well. As long as the story is fun and makes you more motivated in doing the work, then you have gamified it for yourself. So that's why people dress up when they go to a party or something like that. That's also gamification. You invent characters and you put on silly hats and silly clothes, and then it's more fun. That's intrinsic motivation. It's gamification as well.
So it almost goes back to that whole kind of, you know, we in primitive times we were storytellers, and we told everything through pictures and drawings and stories. And you know, over time, it's like the corporate culture, American culture, has kind of stripped away the ability to tell fun stories. Really, to be able to engage people, we need to find practitioners that have that spirit or the guts to go out and actually become a good storyteller.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't have to use the word gamification, because that already might trigger allergic reactions in some circles. Ooh, games, we are not a company that does games. Well, it's intrinsic motivation that you're talking about. Employee engagement. Call it employee engagement then. It comes down to the same thing. The techniques that you use would be the same. And as I often say to some people, say, well, our managers don't like playing games. They say, well, call them business simulations. it's the same thing. They're having fun and doing games. So the wording is not that that important, but the techniques applied throughout the world to allow people to have fun while they're doing their work, those are very much the same, because we're all human beings, and that's the kind of stuff that we like to do.
And it is really funny in the American culture how semantics kind of play a big role in like everything and how you message things. We recently tried to get some business people from our product management group to sit down and do a game with Legos that teaches people about refactoring and the importance of refactoring. And so, like, during that exercise, you're building a house, but you never let the people take away the house, and you give them all the cards. And so you start out by building walls, and then you start putting a roof on it. But the first card they get is a flat roof. And now you give them a pitched roof, and now they're starting to get this, and then by the time the exercise is over, they have this extraordinarily dysfunctional house that nobody would even like resemble a house. And it's like, now can you see how not giving the team the time to actually break things down and then rebuild them back up to the what the next thing is? And it was really powerful. But to get them to show up we didn't have to, we could, it was basically like just what you kind of alluded to about changing that messaging around what that it was. It was a business simulation. It wasn't a game. It wasn't a workshop. It was a business simulation. And we were able to create that space for people to actually have that success. And so that's always the kind of that when I start talking about gamification, it generally gets shut down. And it's always about how we navigate that through different wording for the particular company.
Exactly, yeah. So the contents of the message may be the same, but the format matters, the language that you use. That's true.
So it's really exciting to see this product coming along. I'm really exciting to kind of keep seeing it evolve and downloading it. And you know, if people wanted to kind of, are you guys kind of keeping your roadmap out there for kind of people to see where you're going on?
Well, the danger with roadmaps is that they never come true, as probably you know from other products as well. The issue is we're still in validation phase. So that means we're trying to find product market fit, and that is the most difficult stage for any startup. And you cannot plan when you are done finding product market fit. It's like finding the exit of the woods. You're somewhere in the woods and you have no idea how big the forest is. It could be right behind you, but you're walking in the wrong direction. You don't know until you find the edge. And that is also, for example, some people keep asking us, when does the iOS version come? And we say, well, when we found the exit of the woods. But we cannot plan when that will happen. So we give ourselves plenty of time. On average, the experts tell me, on average, it takes about 3 years for startups to find product market fit. And we are now in it for 1 year and 5 months. So we're doing okay, I think.
Well, as long as you've got the runway to kind of keep up with the...
Oh, we're going to do crowdfunding again at end of this year. So the new round is coming up, and we look forward to doing another round of crowdfunding, because that went quite well the previous time.
Right, and that was definitely a fantastic way to generate capital to kind of invest in this new venture.
Yeah.
And you know it. You're kind of right, and so when I left, I had to leave Lean Agile Intelligence around that year and a half mark to kind of pursue this new job that I have, and because it was a conflict of interest, and you know you got to pay the bills, and so you know, right around that year and a half mark, we really started kind of getting some traction. We started actually getting some people that wanted to use it. They didn't necessarily want to pay us to use it, but they saw the value in it, and they're like, if you give it to us for X amount of time, then we'll kind of sign it. So you get the enterprise kind of that enterprise deal cycle where all the bureaucracy and things like that. So right now they're roughly at around the 2.5 mark, and they're actually starting to finally start signing people. And it's right. Like, it, and you know, we talked to David Horowitz who built the product Retrium, and we kind of interviewed him a couple different times, and he had the same kind of story of like, it really took us kind of that long way to go to kind of
it's
get there.
It's encouraging to hear that.
And so there are people building products in the Agile space to solve specific problems. And they, you know, it took them a while to get there. And you know, with your product's bringing a lot of value, and it could be something truly powerful. And so I'm excited at the possibility for this thing to become reality. Because some of the things that Uprising tries to bring, and I try to bring in my everyday coaching, is the fact that there is no right set of Agile principles and practices. It's all about experimentation. And most likely, you end up with a meta framework. So getting into that concept of a framework of frameworks, yeah. and being able to have people that have had that experience be able to create those tracks to kind of keep track of that is super powerful. We literally just launched at my company some you know, we call it the Outlaw Manager Program, but I joke about it being the Long Island Iced Tea of management. And so we've taken all these different practices like servant leadership and David Marquet's intent-based leadership, and even some of your stuff around the delegation boards and you know, and delegation poker and looking at it and going, well, intent-based leadership talks about having the technical experience to do it and the clarity to basically delegate control. Well, if you look at servant leadership and you talk about foresight and the seven pillars of servant leadership, a lot of those ideas from servant leadership tie into David Marquez in temp base leadership, and then using the delegation board, because you want to be able to delegate authority to your people. But if they're not ready, if they don't have the technical competency or the clarity to actually for you to delegate them, you might start out with that delegation of three, but then the team's goal is to get it to that seventh level of delegation. And it's what qualitative things does the team need to show everybody to show that they've kind of moved up that moved up to that delegation piece. And it also kind of tied into that moving up that leadership ladder that David Marquez kind of talks about. So we love looking at disparate ideas and kind of bringing them together. So having a product that kind of brings that knowledge together,
that's
is huge.
Yeah, that's the intention. And I don't know any other product that that tries to be agnostic itself in terms of methods and frameworks. The whole goal is for people to do their own mixing and matching. Because we have too many islands in the Agile community, and it seems like every week a new island emerges with yet another framework, yet another certification program, and all of them are full of good ideas, but the problem is it's hard to keep up with all the new islands that are emerging. And this look is starting to look like the Philippines. It's just a huge country with only islands. We have to somehow start connecting everything, and that can only be done with technology as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. You know, you had open space agility, X scales, like all these different scaling. And it's just like, what is the next greatest? What's the next greatest article to start a flame war on LinkedIn? So I can totally really appreciate that. We could spend probably a bunch of time talking about agility scales and the work you're doing with that startup, but like, what is going on in the, you know, I'd like to take us back in time just a little bit before we kind of go to where we're going in the future. We'd like to visit the ghost of Christmas past, if you will. You know, what's kind of going on with the Agile, you know, the management 3.0 kind of stuff? I mean, it's touched a lot of people. There's a lot of people that are kind of certified. Like, are you guys still evolving that content? Is it still alive and well?
Yes, well, the team is fully self-sufficient at this time. I'm a co-owner of the product, of the brand, together with the crowd, because we did crowd funding there as well. And but basically I pulled out from the team itself because I wanted to do something different. I had been working on content for 7 years and I wanted to do a product for a change, and that became Agility Scale. So they're basically brother and sister, those two companies. What is funny is that actually the revenue started increasing basically from the moment that I left the team, because they're doing quite well, and more facilitators are signing up to the Management 3.0 licensing program, making me think, well, I should have left the team much earlier, because they're doing quite a good job without me. And of course, I look over their shoulders as a concerned and interested shareholder. But at the same time, I don't manage any daily business. I forward everything to the team when people contact me about Manager 3.0 stuff. Because that's I focus on agility skills and a new book that I'm working on that you probably have a question or two about. That is the future for me personally.
So is there anything, so from the people that are veterans and the people that just kind of love, maybe read the book, are there new ideas coming out in the Management 3.0 camp to kind of either validate some of the things, that more validation around the things in the book or evolutions of some of the practices that
Definitely some new content has appeared in the form of courseware modules, and just at this event at Agile 2018, someone else came up to me and said, Jochen, I have this idea for a reverse delegation poker set from the perspective of the team instead of the perspective of the manager. Would that be, could we publish that as part of Management 3.0? What tool set? I said, well, go to the team. They decide, not I. I delegated that, but sounds like a good idea. So you need to be with Ralph and then everyone else who's handling it. So I hope they're going to pick that up. But yeah, basically the ideas have to come from the facilitators now, from the community. and I have distanced myself somewhat so that I can focus on something else.
So if folks wanted to kind of see some of the evolution of this or kind of send some ideas to that, is it still basically safe to go to the original, like, Management 3.0, like, library of content?
Yeah, management30.com website. The team is the Happy Melly team, happymelly.com. It's all the same team handling it.
And you guys are still running that Slack group? Well,
yes,
you might not be running
exactly,
it.
Yeah, but I'm on the Slack group, so I see all the messages. So that is all still operational and growing, as I said.
It's been interesting to see some of the connected people that we've met through, like, some of our connections to some of the people that are on the board of the Agile Uprising are through connections of people randomly meeting in that Slack channel. So, you know, for the listeners out there who haven't maybe checked that out, like, you guys should look into some of that Happy Melly, the Slack channel. There is a lot of, you know, viable, excellent content on there and some really good collaborations.
And a nice podcast as well. As
there is a
competition or colleague in the industry.
I spend at least 3 hours to 4 hours in the car every day. So it is on my list of things that I listen to. You are always pursuing new things. You are, you know, kind of always trying to innovate. So what is next for Jürgen? You know, we've hit on this idea of this new book.
Yeah. So the funny thing is that the publisher reached out to me, my publisher Wiley, and said, what's your next book project? And I told them, are you kidding? I have a startup that I have to manage. I don't have time for that. But they kept putting pressure on me, and that's sort of a compliment, of course, because it means that the previous book sold well. and then I started considering, other startup founders, they have families that they need to raise, and they're able to do that, so I should be able to write a book while I have a startup. And then I can make it win-win. If I make it a book about the startup scene, about being a founder and entrepreneur, and that is something that Management 3.0 doesn't cover, because that target audience is business leaders, development managers, team leaders, further on in the business life cycle, basically. But I thought it's good to focus on the startup scene. So startups, and then of course scaling up is all the rage in the agile world. So I thought, startup, scale up, well done, make a startup, scale up, screw up. That is the title of the new book, because everyone is interested in screw ups, particularly if they were other people's screw ups. So I can share some of those. And I went back to the publisher and said, okay, well, this is my idea. It's the only one that I'm prepared to do. If I can write about whatever I'm doing now and learning as a startup founder, and as I've already noticed with earlier books, there's no better way to learn something than just to write a book about it. So I am probably now the one benefiting most from this book project, because I learned so much as a founder, having to do all the research just to get this book out the door.
Well, and the amount of introspection that it needs to go into actually writing a book. I mean, I sit down and unsuccessfully write a blog every day. And with a lot of the introspection that, you know, I learn as I put some of these practices together and try them and either fail or have some success, and kind of trying to figure out that context. So, you know, for you to be going through this whole startup process and trying to find the market fit and, you know, getting that initial group together to then doing the crowdfunding, like, the amount of stories that should be able to kind of come out in this book should be pretty good.
I hope so. I have some nice stories to share from myself, yes, but I've also done lots of interviews across Europe and European startups and scale-ups. From Spotify to Zalando, from N26 in Berlin to iZettle in Sweden, and the latest city was Tallinn in Estonia, where I went to some interesting startups like Texify, etc. And they all have interesting stories to share. Some are further along the journey than others. But one thing that was important to me, and I said that to the publisher, I said, there are so many books already about the US startup scene, lots of stories about Silicon Valley companies, etc. And I would like a book about European startups as examples. I mean, the insights apply to everyone, but as examples, I want European companies, because I'm a European and I'm allowed to be somewhat proud of my own continent. There's a lot of things happening there. And I've heard the founding story of Airbnb probably 17 times already. But very few people know that Booking is 5 times larger than Airbnb, and that is a Dutch company, not a Silicon Valley business, and they are rarely featured anywhere. So I thought I'd go to Booking.com and not to Airbnb to find my stories.
That's awesome.
As an example.
And it's been really interesting. So, you know, I'm always kind of dreaming of a lean startup, and, you know, I listened to this podcast by Steli Efti and Eaton Shaw, and they do the startup chat. And it's always interesting when they actually go to, you know, they have two very successful companies here in the U.S., but it's really interesting when they start talking about people reaching out to them from Europe and then starting to kind of see some different patterns in the startup community. And you're right, the startup market in Europe is significantly different than the startup market in the U.S., and then, which is completely contrasted by the startup market in India, because there are a lot of startups now that are coming out of India that it's like, there's a whole bunch of people over here that are actually kind of coming up with some really great ideas, but like how you get funding in India, how you manage all of that is completely different than you would do it in Europe or the US. And, you know, I think, I'm trying to think of it, and it's a product that we all use it. It's, is it Conferzine? There's an actual Agile conference engine or a conference planning engine that a lot of the smaller conferences are using today. And that came directly out of an Indian startup.
Interesting.
And it's really screwed up when you got to pay them in rupees. Because then you're trying to do the calculation of what does rupees convert to? Oh, it's $350 US. Well, this is a great deal. But it manages all your content.
Yeah.
But that was a startup that came out of India.
Yeah,
And now is competing in the U.S. market in this kind of, and so I think that is a super valuable book for us to even bring, because learning about different business kind of centers and how things work help us actually prepare for how we might deal and interact with various cultures, with even, you know, because for me, me as a U.S. person dealing with people in Geneva, like, I can remember needing to get something done with a group of people in Geneva, and I'm like, all right, well, here's the deadline. Here's like when we need this for the integration. And then the guy just magically went on vacation for 4 months. And I'm like,
okay,
all right, well, where did you go? And they're like, well, this is just vacation season. And this is when we're off. If you really needed this done, you should have contacted us 2 months earlier. And I'm like, well, maybe you could have given us some insights into how to get that you needed that. And it's kind of, you know, it's interesting to see how the vacation culture and all that of Europe and in creating work-life balance and all of that ties into startups and their run rates.
Work-life balance is definitely different in Europe, yes, and that's that leads to some interesting insights and stories. But overall, I think the requirements for founders and entrepreneurs of getting to a successful business are mostly the same or similar. But everyone needs to achieve problem solution fit first, and then comes product market fit. And the sources for your funding might be somewhat different, but the fact that you need money and need to convince people to invest in you, that pretty much stays the same. So there's good stories to share, and I look forward to finishing the book. I have a deadline for end of October, agreed with the publisher, and it should be then ready, I assume, somewhere in April. They usually take about 5 months to get a book published.
Are you planning another book tour?
And there will definitely be something like a book tour. I have no idea what it's going to look like yet. I will start planning once I have the manuscript done. That is the first priority now, to get all the words in the right order. But then, I will definitely be promoting the book.
Well, if you want to promote it in the States and you're going to come to the Philly area, you hit up the Uprising and we'll get you another event together.
I would look forward to that.
So we, you know, we're kind of in the interest of, you know, minding your time and minding your space. You know, I'd love to thank you for your time and really appreciate you just popping down here and having the time to chat. So if the people want to kind of, you know, get a hold of you or kind of keep in touch with you on some of these topics or have interest in that, how can our user base or listener base kind of reach out to you?
Well, a couple of URLs. If you're interested in the product, go to mindsettlers.com, mindsettlers.com. If you're interested in my book, then go to startupscaleupscrewup.com. That is the project that I'm working on personally, and you can sign up and you'll be the first one to know when the first chapters are available for early previews, etc. And well, I have my own website on jorgenaplo.com if you're interested in booking me as a speaker or something like that, though I have declined all invites until the end of October because I have no time whatsoever for any more events. But after November the 1st, I will be traveling like a maniac again. I think that's fun.
Awesome. Well, again, so I'm James Gifford. I'm kind of signing off. I'm at Scramando if you want to find me on Twitter. We really thank you for listening in. And if you could give us a rating on iTunes, it helps other people find us from a podcast perspective. If you want to find me, you can also find me on The Coalition. So join us in the conversation around this episode on the coalition.agileuprising.com. And again, thank you so much for your patronage. And if you'd like to contribute to our podcast to help keep us up and running and help us contribute to some of the hosting costs, find our Patreon link in the show notes and donate some funds. You help keep us on the air, and thank you again for your listenership. Have a great night.